Football Weekly Extra from The Guardian in association with sportingbet.com.
Football Weekly, all together now, Extra. Today, Champions League. What's the difference between Chelsea and Mossad? They both make a bloody mess on their travels, but Mossad used more English passports. We look back on the big clash at the San Siro and ask, has Jose's Inter finally come of age? And can Chelsea bounce back at the bridge? Meantime, as Wayne Bridge quits England, the pod offers its sympathies and wonders what reaction awaits him this weekend as he plays away Shay John Terry in an ironic reversal. There's previews of all the tasty weekend games, Stoke Arsenal, those flavour of the month toffees at Tottenham, and Burnley, now featuring an actual countdown champion. But will he spell disaster for the Claret's next opponents, Stony Brook Southerners Portsmouth? All those burning questions, plus post Dr. Sid, and a nod to the Carling Cup final in today's Football Weekly Extra. Steering well clear of self-parody, then here is today's Football Weekly Extra. On board, we have Paul Doyle.
Still here, James.
Yeah, indeed so. Looking forward to your random gems of genius in the course of today's podcast. Smooth-talking Raphael Honigstein.
Hello.
Hi, smooth-looking as well, Raphael, although you're dressing down a bit, I must say. Yes. And Sean Ingle, who's all excited because he's just spent a little bit of time in the company of Courtney Love.
Yeah, Courtney Love's in the building. Last week we
in
were
in the house.
We were kicked out because Vampire Weekend were recording in this very studio.
Wouldn't have happened on my watch, can I tell you?
Absolutely. And, yep. And today Courtney Love is in because she's editing the Film and Weekly. Film and Music Weekly.
Yeah.
Section.
Why?
Coming up because she wants to. She right. She said that
she's going to murder that like she did. No, I can't say that.
You can't say that.
I'm not saying it. I didn't say it. Stand down, men in suits. I didn't say that.
But apparently Woody Allen, quote-unquote, turned her on to The Guardian, and it's her favourite paper. So she's actually asked to do it and wanted to come in, and she was in morning conference.
Right.
Now, basically, that's every morning, the great and the good of The Guardian, sit down, look at the paper, and work out what went right, what went wrong, and they throw things forward to the next day. But today, she was there.
What gems did she offer?
It was very scattergun. I mean, she's obviously very bright, but there's probably a good advertisement there. You know, don't take drugs, kids, because she was just boom.
Oh,
boom,
I see.
Boom.
You can say that, can you? No problems there.
Well, she admitted her. I mean, it's hardly, you know,
right,
it's hardly
okay.
A shock revelation.
Because I walked past the kind of conference room and noticed that people were huddled in. It was a very packed audience. And lots of people were smiling and are going, oh, you're so funny, Courtney, in a way. And I was just wondering what she was saying that was so... Yeah.
Well, she was amusing anecdotes.
Journalists being sycophantic, yeah. Is that what you're suggesting?
But she did have someone with her called Big Danny, who was 6'9".
Right.
And it was about
surely the big
nine.
Bit's a bit superfluous then, isn't it?
But that's what she called him.
It was, oh, right, okay.
And he was about that wide as well. And he was about right. Four, imagine four of you stacked up together. And it was
right. So that's fun. A lovely thought, actually. I'm just going to take a moment with that. Well, that's very, very exciting. It was Woody Harrelson who turned her onto The Guardian. Producer Pete tells me, not Woody Allen. And although, Woody Allen, I know you're a fan as well, so...
I am.
Okay, I'm going to move on then to... there's a lot to talk about today. Sean, you're very keen that we begin with Wayne Bridge. Obviously, he's been in the news recently, not so much for his playing as the fact that John Terry had an affair with his former girlfriend, Vanessa Peroncel. Today he issued a statement saying, "It's always been an honour to play for England. However, after careful thought, I believe my position in the squad is now untenable and potentially divisive. So I feel for the sake of the team and in order to avoid what would be inevitable distractions, I've decided not to put myself forward for selection. I wish the team all the very best in South Africa." Well, you know, we don't often call footballers sensitive creatures or anything, but he does seem to be genuinely troubled by this you have to feel for him, no?
Well, you do. But, I mean, obviously we don't know what exactly went on between Bridge and Terry, the conversations they had, the bonds they had together. What we do know, though, it does leave England's defence, particularly in light of all the other problems they've had.
What other problems? Let's list the other problems, Sean.
Okay, well, there's David James has injury worries at the moment. You've got no Glenn Johnson.
Nope.
Rio Ferdinand continuing to have
So he's just problems. Had a recurrence of his back problem after three games back from his last back problem. Which suggests, and Sir Alex Ferguson, in fact, came out and said this, that possibly international football is now beyond him.
And, of course, then there's Ashley Cole as well, who's got various problems and will be out for several months.
Well, he's got a fractured ankle. I don't know how his uncle is, but his ankle not well, and will keep him out for 3 months, which does obviously cast major doubts over
You're enjoying that, are you, Rafa? Over his World Cup participation. And I just wanted to throw in, before we get to your positives there, Paul, Jolyon Lescott looked rubbish, and so did John Terry midweek. Paul?
Yeah, well, just on the plus side, Phil Jagielka is returning to action for Everton.
Indeed. And
he may just be the man that made Jolyon Lescott look good.
Indeed. Well, a lot of people have been eagerly awaiting. How long has he been out? 10 months, I think?
Yeah, a long time, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And Ryan Shawcross is still playing
Ryan
very well.
Shawcross is still an option. What are the other options then for Capello, who basically has to reinvent his entire back line?
Warnock, Baines, possibly Gibbs as well. I know he's been injured as well.
I think Leighton Baines is head and shoulders above any of the options at left back, including Wayne Bridge.
Right.
So that is one of the reasons, I imagine, apart from any emotional trauma he may be suffering. One of the reasons that Wayne Bridge has decided not to go is because he knows he wouldn't even get on the pitch. He'd just be sulking around the team hotel in the presence of somebody who he doesn't particularly like. And that is a trial for any player. I think that's, for example, one of the reasons why Roy Keane didn't go in 2002, because he didn't want to spend so much time away with people he didn't like.
Still, he would get the opportunity to go to a World Cup and potentially play. He does seem to be taking this decision in order to remove what would have been a major distraction to the team. In fact, you know, this weekend when Chelsea take on Man City, there's going to be so much attention on what happens.
Of course there is, and you're going to have the TV sound will be mic'd down every time the chants break out, as they inevitably will. There'll be lots of press coverage in tomorrow's papers. It'll be all over the place. And then after the game as well. I mean, the England football team is already a huge media distraction when it goes to the World Cup anyway. So, you know, this is one thing that perhaps, you know, Capello, taking a long-term view, might think it's good for his team.
Mm. Yeah, the other point in all of that, of course, is that John Terry isn't injured at the moment, but he's not playing well.
Well, this is what I was saying. He was very disappointing, I think, from Chelsea's point of view, at the San Siro Wednesday night. Yeah. And Jolyon Lescott equally for City in their defeat to Stoke, which we'll come on to perhaps
He has been quite wobbly for the last few months. And before Christmas, we were saying, well, it was Peter Cech that was sowing uncertainty amid the Chelsea defenders. But Cech has been in good form in the last few months, whereas Terry still hasn't been.
Cech no longer in good form. Of course, he's got, what, knackered calf muscle. Is that right, Raphael?
Torn calf muscle, I think.
Technical. And how long will he be out for?
Well, I think the final scan is being done as we are recording the scan, but this thing can be quite nasty. Right. I remember a couple of German players having similar problems, and it can take up to a month.
But the backup, Ilario by name, but not by nature. He's actually a decent keeper, no?
He's always done fairly well when he's come in, especially in Europe, where I think there is less of a, shall we say, Stoke approach at play. But I think in the Premier League, they might suffer more than on the European stage.
All right, well, let's get on to what was the big game midweek. Inter against Chelsea at the San Siro. Absolutely huge win this, 2-1 for Inter, who used to fail in the must-win matches in Europe. They used to be slow starters in games, but they certainly weren't last night. And they also particularly used to suffer against the English. But boy, what a change there's been in their mentality under Mourinho, because they really looked like world beaters last night.
I think world beaters is perhaps overrating it.
They beat a team who hadn't lost in 15 matches.
But what I was impressed with Mourinho was the way they attacked. They, you know, they played two strikers up front against Chelsea, which I think Gareth Southgate made this point on ITV's coverage last night, that generally Chelsea don't really face very often. You know, Mourinho attacked the flanks. You know, there was no Bissinger, no Cole, so he kept putting pressure on. Even when they went 2-1 up, you know, he made an attacking substitutions. And I was impressed by Inter. You know, particularly Schneider, I think, played very well, you know, in the hole. I would say, though,
Lucio.
And
Clive Tiltley seemed to, he's actually quite good, this Lucio fellow. I mean, the guy's a world champion.
And the two strikers as well were brilliant. Not only do Chelsea not regularly face two strikers, they very seldom face two strikers of that quality. Their movement was just brilliant and continually caught Terry flat-footed.
Having said that, I think Chelsea did enough in the second half to come away with a draw and really boss the game to a large extent, not just in terms of possession, but also in creating the more clear-cut chances. After that first half an hour, where Terry, as you said, really had a total nightmare. I mean, Samuel Eto'o should have scored a second, and it would have been a very different game. What I found really interesting and really surprising, a lot of people said, we knew this is going to be, you know, this. Everybody knew what kind of game we're going to get, but I think it was completely different. It was very, very open game. And I think the fact that Ancelotti decided to play with nominally three up front left the midfield quite exposed, and the same for Inter with two strikers. So when your opposing team had possession, they usually had a lot of time to create things, which was unusual. Last year against United, they were really hopeless and were so disappointing. They never played neither home or away. And with Snyder, it's a very different team.
Yeah, it should be said that Chelsea are still, you know, strong favourites. You know, with the bookmakers, you know, 2-1 away from home is a good result. They had a
draw. We'll see Inter go through, and Jose Mourinho and draws.
Possibly, but Chelsea are, you know, a 13-8 on to go through.
Right, I still think that it's not a good result for them. It's not as bad as it could have been.
No.
And certainly they're right to feel wronged about the fact that they weren't given a penalty.
Exactly.
And it was interesting, Jose Mourinho's comments afterwards. He said, yes, it should have been a penalty. I came to Italy an honest man, and Italy won't change me. He was getting a bit upset because Milan had once again benefited from the non-awarding of a pretty clear penalty to their opponents earlier on that day in Florence, where they came back from a goal down to win 2-1 and move to within 4 points of Inter. Excuse me for sneaking in a bit of a Serie A report. But anyway, yes, sure.
I was just going to ask, how have the Italian papers, what have they made of the victory? Because they've been very anti-Mourinho in the sort of year and a half.
Yeah, no, it's
been
all Mourinho. So it's really about Inter. I mean, the roar of it. There's a picture of Cambiasso after that terrific volley. And there he is, and it says "The Roar of Inter." That's the front cover of the Gazetta. And what other ones have we got? We've got Inter, oh yes. Anytime there's something English involved, the Italian papers like to go with "oh yes" as a headline. Not sure why. And Inter passed their first English lesson. I think that was La Repubblica today. They're all very positive. And I think La Repubblica, especially Gianni Moro, who's probably my favourite Italian journalist, was making this very point about the change of mentality, which is a Mourinho thing. This was a team that seemed to dither, meander its way through crucial matches, that seemed to be afraid, particularly of English clubs, and those two elements weren't on show yesterday. Now, Chelsea, as we say, still very much in the tie. This weekend at Stamford Bridge, then, their game against a Man City side who are coming off an absolutely dismal midweek performance, which saw them go out of the FA Cup to Stoke. Now, there were, again, refereeing decisions that may well have contributed to this, Adebayor being sent off harshly, no, but all the same, it was a real slap in the face for City and Mancini.
Well, it's quite symptomatic of the way they've gone under Mancini, because he beat Stoke in his first game in charge of Man City, but now he's played them three times in the last 2 weeks or so and failed to beat them. And yesterday, deservedly lost, certainly in extra time. There only looked like ever being one winner, and Stoke were actually brilliant. And Tony Pulis got all the technical decisions right, including playing Dean Whitehead at right back, which it was an improbable triumph. And he reacted to Mancini's substitutions well. And Stoke deservedly won the match.
City, this weekend then, do you see the unravelling continuing at Stamford Bridge, Rafa?
I'm afraid so. There are now strong rumours flying around at City that Mancini is on his last leg and will not stay unless they make the top four. That there is a clause in his contract that would allow City to get rid of him very, very cheaply if he doesn't make it. And you just wonder how much the team still believes in him, and how much he still believes in that team, which is still not his. You know, he was very frustrated in the transfer window,
right,
with not being able, for various reasons, to make the signings he wanted to. And just from his body language, from the stuff he said on television, you just feel that he might have already said goodbye mentally to this little stay in England.
It's extraordinary from his point of view and the club's point of view if they weren't to give this experiment or this project more time.
Well, he's only 9-1 now to be the next manager, Premier League manager to go, which I think is third favourite.
Who's the favourite?
It's Avram Grant. He's 11-10.
Also, should mention that Adebayor's sending off, which I referenced earlier, means that he won't be playing in the game at Stamford Bridge. Carlos Tevez presumably will be back, as I suppose will Bellamy, who featured against Stoke. That's it for part one, though, and boy, do we have a cracking part two lined up. There's Raphael Honigstein, there's Sid Lowe, there's your post as well. Stand by for that.
Football Weekly from The Guardian, in association with SportingBet.com.
Now, starting off part two in traditional fashion, we have Dr. Sid on the line from Barajas Airport in Madrid. Sid.
Hello, James. Yeah, the only airport in the world named after a member of the A-team. as far as I know, anyway.
Yeah, indeed so. If only Barry were here. Yes. Now, Sid, the first leg of the Champions League Super 16 is over and no Spanish clubs have managed to actually get a win. Is anyone worried about that there in Spain?
No wins in Europe, but I suppose you can kind of put together the caveat to that. It's not that awful in truth. You know, Barcelona went away and got an away goal in a 1-1 draw, so that's really not that bad a result. Real Madrid was a poor result in so much as they didn't, you know, they didn't score in Lyon, but the way they see it, 1-0 is easily turnaroundable. I think the good thing from Real Madrid's point of view really was the result, because they should have been probably beaten by more than that in Lyon. And then Sevilla get a 1-1 draw in Moscow, which again isn't a bad result. So yeah, it's true that none of them have won, but I think they're all reasonably well placed to go through. And in a way, the concerning thing will be more the performances than the results. I thought Barcelona were fortunate to equalise, and well, they weren't so much fortunate to equalise, but they were fortunate to come away with a draw. Madrid were fortunate to only be beaten 1-0, and Sevilla were the one side of the three that looked like they were pretty much in control to some extent.
So people aren't panicking particularly there in Spain about this?
They're not panicking. Obviously there is this ever so slight sort of undercurrent of, oh, hang on a minute, maybe there is a slight problem. And of course this is nothing new. I mean, for a long time we've seen Spanish sides do brilliantly and then go into Europe and not do quite so well. Now it is true, obviously, that Barcelona were European champions last year, but you can't underestimate the impact of a Real Madrid side who won 16 games out of 17 and drew the other last year in La Liga, going and playing Liverpool and then getting absolutely battered. And that did create a backlash where people were saying, well, hang on a minute, Europe asked for something else. Europe is a different proposition altogether. And of course, underlying that is that question mark of maybe the Spanish league's not quite as strong as we think. And there is a slight element of one or two people asking that question this time around. Obviously, that will go out the window if they will go through in the second leg.
Yeah, indeed so. Now, in Madrid, meantime, I see pictures of a 10-metre statue of Cristiano Ronaldo. Explain.
Well, Cristiano Ronaldo was doing an advert for one of his sponsors, and they put together an entire set, and the idea was that they would build this Madrid square into what they were going to then rename the Praça Ronaldo, in other words, the Square of Ronaldo, and they built this huge kind of it almost looks a little bit like that kind of metallic-y, Michael Jackson-y sort of image.
History.
History, that's the one I was looking for. Yeah, I'm afraid I'm not really up on Michael Jackson stuff. And and they built this square so they can film advert. Ronaldo was in London yesterday doing a series of things for his sponsor as well. So he is all over the papers, and he's been basically the only thing anyone in Madrid's talking about for the last 4 or 5 days now. I'm starting to feel a little bit worried. I hate the thought that possibly I might have contributed to this by writing about it in such effusive terms on Monday.
Effusive is the word. Sid, yeah. The page was almost sticky. Woodison posts in saying, Ronaldo being God. It reminds me of a joke. What's the difference between Ronaldo and God? God doesn't walk around Madrid thinking he's Ronaldo. Yes.
Very good.
Very, very good. Before we let you go, Sid, Jermaine Pennant Watch, what's the latest?
Well, the latest from Jermaine Pennant Watch is Jermaine Pennant Watch might well be a command, because Jermaine Pennant Play is looking increasingly like it's not going to happen. He was told he couldn't train with his teammates yesterday in Zaragoza because he turned up late for training for the third time in a fortnight. Now, the last time he was late for training because he was pulled over by the police having been caught speeding. So they said, well, that's fair enough. You were pulled over. They spoke to you. They let you go. They didn't charge you, but you were late. But the fact that it's the third time is a real problem. One of the players came out yesterday, one of his teammates, a guy called Ruben Pulido, and he was saying, well, you know, we all have to get up early, we all work very hard, we all have to come in and do this. And every now and again, yeah, people are late, but three times in 2 weeks is not right. And he made a brilliant remark, at least I thought it was a brilliant remark. Anyway, he said, you see, doing this is just not funny. And I don't know about you, but there's something about someone saying it's not funny that makes it seem quite funny. But anyway, he said, it's not funny, Jermaine. And I'm afraid the teammates are not very impressed with him.
Oh, there you go. Sid, magnificent stuff. Enjoy your flight, and we'll catch up with you on Monday.
Yeah, brilliant. Speak to you then.
Thanks, Sid. Sid Lowe there in Spain. Consideration of Cristiano Ronaldo is God, Richard Dawkins must play for Lyon, presumably the Paul Doerr. But anyway, Raphael Honigstein, how's that UEFA coefficient race going?
It's going pretty well, although last night's result for Inter was huge in that respect.
Not as huge as Bayern Munich's controversial win over Fiorentina.
Nothing controversial there.
Nothing at all. Hey.
Clearly onside.
No, but just for anyone who's just joining us in this discussion, this season has already seen Scotland lose one of its Champions League places to Belgium. And there is now an increasing likelihood, yes, that Serie A will lose one of its four slots to Germany And thus join, effectively, the second tier of European footballing nations.
Where they belong, some might say.
Yeah, but, have it you, sir.
No, unless something really dramatic happens, yeah. i.e. Fiorentina knock out Bayern, yes. Stuttgart lose, and all the German clubs in the Europa League were to get knocked out very early on, it looks as if Germany will have that fourth spot back.
And that'll be not from next season, but the season after.
That's right.
Correct. Crikey.
Stuttgart, by the way, they were terrific against Barcelona, particularly in the first half. They ran out of steam a little bit in the second half, but they were terrific. And again, actually, we saw a striking partnership working really well. Kakao and Pogrebniak were brilliant and really posed a lot of difficulty to...
Pogrebniak.
That's what I was said, actually. And Christian Gross is a genius.
I don't know if he's a genius, but he's really turned them around and... You were right, they were absolutely sensational the first half. Probably the best Stuttgart performance I've seen since they beat United in 2003 with Felix Magath and all these young guns of German football then. And Barcelona were very, very lucky to get away 1-0 down at half time and then turn it around fortuitously with the goal from Ibrahimovic. And they looked very, very vulnerable and very ordinary in the first half. And I understand, even though it might be over the top, but I really understand why they came under a lot of criticism in the Catalan press.
What kind of chances do you think they have in the return? Are they a good away side, Stuttgart?
They're a decent away side, but counter-attacking is not really their game. I can't really see them do it. I think 1-0 would have been an unbelievable result, or 2-1, but... I think it's going to be very, very tough. And I don't think, crucially, that they really believe that they can pull off a result there. So
just to return to the Christian Gross point, can you say exactly what he has done to turn things around? Because I understand that some of those players, such as the young guy Gebhardt, who was really good against Barcelona, he was in the reserves and then Gross promoted him. I don't know, did Molinaro play regularly?
Molinaro came from Juventus in the winter on a loan, and he's been very, very good. Stuttgart are an up and down side, and I think the reason for that is that there is really a lack of discipline in the dressing room, and Gross has really sorted them out. Under Marcus Babbel, the team were taking all sorts of liberties, and Gross has come in with a very clear game plan, but also with a sort of a no tolerance policy when it comes to misbehaving or missing training, etc. And that's been enough to turn what it was always going to be a very talented side on paper for me. A top three side easily in Germany, that's where they finished last year, into a good force again.
Jens Lehmann, of course, part of that locker room. Any new mad escapades from him?
Well, there was one very mad incident. He nearly skived down Carlos Puyol, where he raised his leg almost over Puyol's head, coming out to see a ball out. But instead of just shielding it, he stuck out a leg and nearly decapitated Puyol in the process. He's got form on that as well. It's a sort of a kung fu move that we've seen from him and Oliver Kahn before. The maddest thing, I suppose, at the moment is that at 40, he's still thinking whether he might want to continue and play an extra year next year. And he's talking about a return to the Premier League.
Very quickly, Rafael, what's the situation at the top of the Bundesliga?
Bayern and Leverkusen still locked on goal difference. Leverkusen just one goal ahead and Schalke... just behind.
Oof.
So a huge weekend coming up. I don't know if we're gonna.
Well, go on. How huge now? What? Why huge?
Well, really big games.
What?
Bayern playing at
so
home.
Impressive, James.
No, I just want to know.
you get 10 minutes of Italian football almost every show, and give the man a couple of minutes, surely.
Yeah, I can see the way this is going. I'm going to have to lose 30% of my. My
no
Italian roundup
you.
And give it to
There's
the
no
Bundesliga.
Roundup. It's midweek now. There's no roundup.
Yeah. Go on.
Huge games.
Yes.
Friday night.
In a nutshell.
Schalke. Friday night, live on UK television.
Yes.
Schalke v Dortmund.
Yeah.
The biggest derby in
Central
Europe.
Can you bring yourself
to
say their name?
Who?
ESPN?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Very good.
Then Leverkusen Cologne. It's another big derby, West German derby. And on Saturday, also live on UK television, Bayern playing Hamburg.
Ooh.
Minus Van Nistelrooy, probably because he's still not recovered from a muscle injury, but a very, very big game and might just well be the sort of weekend that shapes the title race.
Speaking of UK television, it's good to see you back on our screens this week, James.
Oh, here we go.
What were you on, James?
I was on Chelsea television. Well, it was lovely, actually. I really enjoyed the very professional operation they have there.
And what did you say when you came in the office this morning?
back in the game. Now, posts. Toon Toon raises the question of Ronaldo, who, of course, just announced the next season's going to be his last. Or is it this season's going to be his last? Next season, I think, it's going to be his last. You know, Ronaldo, the real Ronaldo. And he says, El Fenomeno, did he actually live up to all that early promise? Is he up there with the greats, is Toon Toon's question. And Mobad says that he isn't. He could have been, but the injuries... Cataldo, what do you think?
He was still player of the tournament in the 2002 World Cup. Yeah. You know, he still got Brazil to the final before his, you know, the horrible thing that happened to him before France game. In 95-96 for Barcelona, he was absolutely sensational. If you ever want to buy some old DVDs, and you can look them up in various football magazines, and some of the stuff he did was incredible.
You can find it on YouTube. Right?
Or find on YouTube, yeah. Exactly. It's almost like when you compare boxers.
His first season in Italy as well. He had 35 goals, I think, for
but it's
Inter.
Like, how do you define greatness? Is it greatness over a short period of time, over a very long period of time? Now,
is he as great? Did his career turn out to be as great as we thought it was going to be?
Perhaps not, but...
He is still the all-time leading goalscorer in the World Cup. Hmm. Although, unlike Juste Fontaine, he did get to score some of those goals against the likes of Costa Rica.
Hmm.
The problem with him is that he missed 3 or 4 years of his... that would have been his best years in Italy, and never was really the same afterwards. Bit like, I think in that sense, even though he didn't have the injury problem, a bit like Ronaldinho, where you think, yes, he's amazing, he's fantastic, but he could have been even better, and that sense of regret will always tinge his reputation.
Well, we're talking about multiple World Footballer of the Years here. So,
well, I mean, Diego Maradona is very much considered one of the greats, and he missed some of his career.
Certainly did, didn't he? Yeah. Hoser in London says, what's the latest on the production of the I Belong to Jimbo t-shirt? Sean, you announced a range of clothing.
Well, and, I think we were looking into it, and we still are. I mean, obviously, now that you're not on TV as much, perhaps the demand is dipping.
No, I don't. Wouldn't that makes it even more of a cult item?
Possibly.
Yeah.
If people are really keen and would actually pay, you know, I don't know, £15
for a t-shirt.
That's reasonable.
Can't we just do it the way Ronaldo did his? Cristiano Ronaldo just with ball pen.
Barry didn't pay £15, or Mrs. Barry didn't pay £15 for the one that he sported in our pub one day.
But you don't come cheap, you know. You're agent.
Are you? Do I get a licensing thing on this?
I'm not sure, but you'll probably ask for one.
Well, I don't know about that.
Revenue looked very badly on image rights deals now. You don't want to.
All right then.
Get engaged.
Well, I think it's a terrific idea. A range of, you know, crockery, mugs, that kind of thing. All that sort of stuff. It's a long overdue. Blue Legend. Ooh, we mentioned the worst dressed manager of all time in Monday's podcast. He chips in with Joaquin Caparrós. Looks like a madman every time I've seen Bill Bauer this season. He agrees that any manager wearing a club kit to manage on game day just looks unprofessional. Sianfort, something like that, says no discussion of manager sartorial transgressions is complete without mention of Wenger's ankle-length sleeping bag. Funky Mother Parker mentions Keegan, and Gareth Southgate's impression of a Year 10 senior school student, which I think is fair. But the winner is Raphael, and you might enjoy this. I don't know, Blunt Guardian provides this. He says, worst dressed trainer ever. Legendary is the appointment of Uli Stilicker as German national coach. Except he wasn't, really. I have a photo of him here, and perhaps producer people
linked to it. It is brilliant.
He's wearing, how would you describe this? This kind of 1950s Rotary Club style black and yellow checked check jacket. And he's got one of those black shirts with white collars underneath it. All right, then. And then an extraordinary, well, it looks like a tie, but can it be? I don't know, underneath that. But anyway, Blunt Guardian contributes some other fascinating details. You probably remember this, that he thought he was being appointed at this press conference to be the manager. And it turned out that Eric Ribbick was actually the main man. He was just the assistant.
He was just the assistant. Poor chap. Those were the dark days of German football, where Sean Dundee was made a German international.
And how did Stilicker react to his disappointment on that occasion? Did he react in much the same way as he reacted when he missed that penalty in the 1982 semi-final?
Yeah.
And he went down on his knees and rocked backwards and forwards like a little baby in his cot.
It was a bit like that. I think he resigned about a month later and then took over the under-21s and was terrible with them as well.
Right. Well, there you go. That is part two. Very, very shortly, we're going to be looking forward to the weekend's fixtures and having another probe into the hideous mess of Pompey's financial morass.
Football Weekly from The Guardian, in association with sportingbet.com.
Now, as you probably read, UEFA shocked nobody this week by announcing that English clubs are more in debt than anybody else. In fact, more than the rest of European football put together. This all coincides with the news that Portsmouth are about to become the first Premier League club in administration, possibly this very evening, Sean Ingle. To get the latest on Pompey's collapse, let's speak to the man in the know, Jamie Jackson. Jamie.
Hello.
Hi, Jamie. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
I am too. It's been another bad, bad week for Portsmouth. The news that administration is imminent and talk of a 20-point penalty for next season. You're the man within the context inside this this ravaged club. But what's the feeling there?
There's a lot of people there demoralised, obviously. There's a lot of people about to lose their jobs, it seems. With regard to what happens next, I mean, all this does really is buy time, the administration. They still have certain debts which they haven't reduced, which are the football creditors. There's about £10 million owed to other clubs for transfers, plus the HMRC, which aren't a football creditor but consider themselves, you know, the same status in that they want 100% back. And they're owed, well, £12.1 million is the amount that the original winding up petition was for, but you could probably add another £4 or £5 million to that. For example, there was a £1.8 million PAYE stroke national insurance payment, which was due on Monday, which I'm almost certain hasn't been paid. So they still need to find at least £23 million, even before you get to Bauram Chanrai's money, who's owed about 17, and Sasha Gaidamax, who's £30.5 million.
Horrific. Jamie, what's the feeling among people like Avram Grant? I mean, this was a club that, if you like, had an Icarus-like trajectory. They flew too close, perhaps, to the sun, you know, with their FA Cup, you know, waxed wings and that. And it seems now as almost as if the gods have got it in for them. Everything goes against them financially, in the courts, but on the football field as well. I mean, how is Avram Grant feeling at the moment?
Well, from what I understand, he's absolutely furious. He's furious with the Premier League. He's furious with the kind of the former regime, if you like, you know, the Al Faraj stroke Mark Jacob regime. He feels, again, from what I understand, that he was not told the truth. He might even have been misled when taking the job. Going back to the Premier League, he can't understand why they didn't lift, you know, why they didn't lift the embargo during the at the beginning of the January window. And he's totally and utterly cheesed off, really, by it all. He likes, you know, he from what I understand, he doesn't like to walk away from situations, but he may well be getting to a point now where he just thinks he's actually, you know, just there's nothing left to fight for. So, you know, he's not particularly happy.
What do you think the likely sporting implications of going into administration are will be? Do they have to now sell the last remaining assets, i.e. the few players that can actually bring them some money, or will the administrator think it's worth holding on to them and sell them in a more orderly fashion for higher prices?
Yeah, it's a good question. Basically, according to the Premier League, it's not an automatic right that once a club of theirs goes into administration, they can sell players. You know, the Premier League board has to ratify that. But from what I understand, they're minded to help one of their distressed clubs, you know, in whatever way they can do. So first of all, yes, I think they will be able to sell players. When you look at the squad, no disrespect, you know, to them, there's not too many of high value in that squad. I mean, you're looking at what Kevin Boateng maybe. And after that, you kind of struggle a little bit, don't you? Because David James is an England keeper, but he's on a one-year contract and he's 39. Haridason's a senior player, but, you know, he's 30-odd. And you go through it and you just wonder exactly how much they can realise through selling the players.
Well, Jamie, thank you very much for that update and look forward to speaking to you soon.
No doubt. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Jamie.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Of course, not everyone's unhappy with the current situation at Portsmouth, Sean Ingle.
I wouldn't say that, by any means, but...
Silver lining time?
Well, I did back them to finish bottom at 20-1 at the start of the season and said it on the pod.
Okay. They're taking on...
I backed Jermaine Defoe to score more goals than the entire Portsmouth team.
Yeah, famously.
This could come to fruition.
Yeah, it also could.
So I'll be knocking on my mate's door who took that bet.
Oh, excellent.
It'll make up for the United. We'll finish the outside the fourth.
It's been a perverse season in the Premier League. They haven't looked like a top four side, and yet they could end up being champions. It's quite damning.
I'd say possibly compared to previous leagues, but compared to this Premier League, they
well,
do
exactly.
Look like
I hadn't envisaged a Premier League being quite so bad this season.
Okay, all right.
I was correct
it's
about
the
United.
Premier League's four. Right, okay. Portsmouth will be facing an almost meaningless at this point trip to Burnley, a Burnley team who feature Clark Carlisle, a champion on Countdown. For foreign listeners, Sean Ingle, what does this mean?
Well, Countdown's a Channel 4 show that's been going since 1982. It's basically on about 3 o'clock in the afternoons. Grannies like to play it. So it's a words and numbers game. It's usually school kids, university students, and old people play it. But Clark Carlisle was on yesterday.
You have to be pretty brainy to be champion.
You do, because you have to have good both arithmetic. Sorry, fucking hell. You need to have both. You have to have good maths and English skills. And he was brilliant. He romped home yesterday.
All right,
he's on again today.
The pick of his words was the set of letters SWGEIODRS, and he picked up 7 points for Dossier. There you go. Rick Wakeman's cape says, could the Premier League not have a countdown? You enjoy that reference, do you? Not have a countdown face-off for extra points in the league, seeing young Clark Carlisle, of course, the player in question, against the cranial might of John Terry, Rio Ferdinand and Stevie G. I'd pay money to see that. I think you're just being a little bit unkind there. Now, that's not the only game, of course, going on this weekend. There's plenty of others. Birmingham Wigan, Bolton Wolves, Chelsea Man City, we talked about that already. Ooh, big match here at the Britannia. Stoke against Arsenal. Stoke have got a terrific record against Wenger's side, but Arsenal really need to make this one count, don't they?
Well, I think this is possibly the biggest game of Arsenal season so far. I mean, it sounds a ridiculous thing to say, but they're only 6 points behind Chelsea. Their running is easier than their rivals. You know, after they play Stoke, Arsenal play Burnley, then Hull, then West Ham, then Birmingham, then Wolves. They could win all six of those games. If they do, they've got a real chance of winning the title. Now, Arsenal are so fragile, and you don't know what to expect. But if they can go to the Britannia Stadium and beat Stoke, they are right back in this title race.
Right. They got taken apart by Stoke in the Cup, though, didn't they?
Yeah, but they failed at a weakened side.
Right. But Stoke are in great form at the moment. They're goal crazy at the Britannia. They're averaging over 2 goals a game there over the last 7 or 8 games.
Mm.
And they're really progressing as a side, as Pulis is progressing as a manager. This of course,
Tunchai
is only his...
coming into the lineup as well. That's nice to see, because he wasn't in favour at the start.
Yeah, around about Christmas time, he became a regular in the side. And he's brought an extra dimension. And this, of course, is only Pulis' second season as a manager in the top flight. And he's clearly learning. James, you're giving me the guillotine sign.
No, I'm getting
the
guillotine sign from that man, the producer, right. Pete, who seems to think that we've almost finished. But I've got loads of things still to ask everybody. Like, Liverpool against Blackburn and the resurgent Rovers. Anthony Farrant-Heal says, does anybody else think Liverpool are actually overachieving? The talent level of their team is thinner than... Well, I wouldn't say it's thinner than... Yet they are in the mix for the Champions League. It's only relative to history that they're failing. Relative to reality, they're a roaring success. For the players they've got, what do you think? Yes, no?
Well, they spent a lot of money to get those players.
Yeah, okay. A qualified no then. Sunderland Fulham on Sunday. Tottenham against Everton. Pavlyuchenko's in form, isn't he?
He is, yeah. Harry Redknapp didn't look very impressed when he scored last night. The applause was very muted, and afterwards he told the press that he got on great with Pavlyuchenko, but then also mentioned that he doesn't actually speak to him because Pavlyuchenko doesn't speak English. Which I don't think went down particularly well.
I think from a Spurs perspective, this is exactly the sort of game that they need to win if they want to make fourth, and they won't because they're Spurs.
Interesting. All right, and then post that, there's just a small matter of the League Cup final. Manchester United against Aston Villa. United, who, as we mentioned before, Ferdinand, not an option for them this weekend. Well, Anderson's season's already over, possibly less influential absence that. And Villa with undoubtedly more to play for. No, a Villa team that's already beaten United back in December. How do you see this one going?
I think Villa have got a very good chance. I mean, they're obviously taking it very seriously. He's managed to rest a couple of players against Palace, and they got a good result. I think they will have more confidence going into that game from that. And he's approaching it as a genuine proper cup final with 3 days of preparation in the hotel. I think they've got a decent chance.
Well, fascinating stuff. We'll see through the Carling Cup final And, of course, all the other big games this weekend. And we'll be reviewing all of that in Monday's Football Weekly. In the meantime, thanks, Producer Pete. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, Paul Doyle.
Bye, James.
Thank you, Sean Ingle.
Cheers, James.
And thank you, Raphael Honigstein.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
See you on Monday.
Football Weekly Extra from The Guardian in association with SportingBet.com.